Today is the 2nd of June 2016. I'm interviewing Mason Horne, late of Pootery, about the life and times of his family. Thank you, Mason.
Well, my mother and father went to Pootery in May 1926 to buy a farm. They had two daughters and they lived in a tent on the farm until about 1928-29. They built a house, and to buy the house, my father used to buy cull lambs in the autumn in Wairoa and drive them home, winter them, and drive them to Hawke's Bay in the spring to sell them. This particular year must have been early 1928. The service car driver gave him a paper, and in the advertisements, there was a mill selling out at Pukatitri. So he rang Mason Waterworth, the agent. He said, "Mason, bring a buyer out and buy these hoggets on the road. There's a mill for sale and I want to get some timber." So Mason Waterworth brought a buyer out, bought the lambs there and then. My father went to Pukatitri. These two mills were selling out, Henderson and McLeod and Gardner were the mills. Yes. He bought the timber, I don't know how many hundred feet, super feet, for £82.
Wouldn't buy a board today.
Wouldn't buy a board, exactly. It came to Wairoa, I think, by boat to Waikokopu, and then it was freighted by road to Wairoa, and then eventually to Pootery, and they built the house, or somewhere, 28, 29, thereabouts. The builder was a fellow called Bill Brady. They lived in a tent. Mum cooked for them with her two daughters. And in 1930, I came on the scene, and we just lived there. And Dad ran the farm, of course, and had men working for him. But he still used to buy the hoggets and winter them and sell them. And then the first year he was there, that's right, the first year he was there, there'd be no stock on the place, there'd been a drought, and he went to Gisborne and bought cattle. He bought 500 head of cattle, and they cost him an average of £1.06 and tuppence. A drover brought them through to Wairoa, and he drove them up himself up the Crookwood Road, and he stayed in one of the holding paddocks there, and he met one of the farmers on the Crookwood Road. He said, "You shouldn't be taking those cattle to Pootery. Pootery's no place for cattle. They'll all die." And my father said to him, I remember Dad telling me this. Dad said to this chap, "I've never seen a beast die with a full belly yet. And there's still plenty of grass at Pootery." So, well, anyway, that was the side part of the story. And we just lived at Pootery. My sisters went to the local school, and then I eventually went and started in 1936, I think, to the little school was on the hill just opposite the house. And we had different teachers, some of them stayed with us. And then came along in the early 1940s, I went to Gisborne High School for 2 years. A year and not quite 2 years, I left school the day the war ended, August 1945, and went home to the farm. I remember the headmaster wanted an interview, and he said, "You know, we could do things with this son of yours." Dad said, "I can't do without him. I've got to have him on the farm. He's not going to be a learned man. He's going to be a farmer. That's me." Anyway, I went home and worked on the farm, and we had another chap with us there, and the odd fencer general, and a chap called Towny Waterhouse worked with us. He was a very well-known and well-respected man. Right. My first year at school was 1944, and at that stage the government had RFCs, Rural Field Cadets.
Yes.
And someone rang Dad and said, "Would you take one?" And Dad said to him, "Well, what do you mean? What do I do? Does he catch my horse or do I catch his?" He said, "No, you just treat him as a general farm hand, and he's with you for 12 months. And the chap that we got in 1944 was a fellow called Jim Stewart, who later became rector of Lincoln College. He was later Sir James Stewart, and he was a terrific footballer. He was a front row prop. He came from Wanganui. He was a front row prop. He played for the New Zealand Varsities and Canterbury.
Yes.
As I say, later became Sir James Stewart, the rector of Lincoln College.
And he started working at...
He started his first year with us, was my father, 1944. He came and saw us not long before Dad had died, in the mid-70s. He came to Gisborne and looked us up, and my mother and father lived in Gisborne, and he was a terrific chap, and he wrote a book evidently of his life, and Mum and Dad have mentioned in that. He sewed super by hand, and he remembers that part of it well. That was in 1944. And then I just carried on working on the farm. When I was 17, I had two or three good dogs, and Dad had gone to Gisborne to buy cows. And he couldn't buy anything at the fair. He didn't buy anything at the fair, but he bought some privately at Parakanapa. And when he came home, he said, "Well, I bought Tamudu cows, and I bought the Morris's cows." Mum said to him, "How are you going to get them home?" He said, "Mason's going to go and get them." And Mum said, "You can't send him away up there on his own. He's only 17. Dad said, "He'll never learn younger." So he cut me loose with a pack horse and gear. Away I went. I rode to Warra the first day and stayed with a good friend of ours. And there was a little horse paddock across the road. I put my horses in there. Mrs. Dev looked after me well. And then the next day I rode to Tinorodo and stayed at the sale yards there. And then the next day I went to Tamudu, picked up their cows, came back to Morris's and stayed the night with them, and then drove them back through Warra and back to Bootree. It was a challenge, but I enjoyed it.
You obviously had good dogs.
I did have, I had three dogs before I went to high school. I used to take my dogs to school, at primary school, and tie them up under a tree and then go and shift some sheep or muster after school in the afternoon. I was never a dog trialer, but I always had two or three good handy dogs, and I worked them. Used to help different neighbours out mustering and shearing.
Yes, that would have been quite an exercise as a 17-year-old still to bring. How many cattle?
88 cows.
I know we used to live about 8 miles from Timona Freezing Works, and because I was a dairy farmer, our family were dairy farming since the early 1900s, so we always drove the boner cows to the freezing works, and everything we did on the road when we took them away grazing, didn't have any trucks those days to count them.
And the next year, I bought we got the calves out of them, and I drove them down to Crownthorpe. There's a friend of ours got grazing up there from a chap Jacobs at the top of the Crownthorpe through Matapira, behind Matapira Station, and I drove the cows from home down to there the next year. Exciting time.
What was it like growing up? Where did you socialise? Because there wasn't anywhere to socialise except amongst the people you...
Just amongst our locals, yes.
That's because there was nothing at Raupanga, was there? Did they have a hall there?
There was a hall there, but the hall didn't come till into the 50s.
And I suppose Wairoa was about the closest...
Wairoa, and that was 40 miles.
So I suppose you were a hunter?
Oh, yes. Used to hunt a lot of deer, pigs. Had a very good Maori that worked for us. He was a very keen hunter, terrific chap. Deer or pigs, we used to most weekends. My father used to think I was silly doing wasting energy, thinking I should have been cutting scrub.
That's typical of a father. Yeah, I know. My own father used to say, I'd say, "Look, can I have a couple of days off this weekend?" He'd say, "What do you want a time off for?" He said, "We had a couple of rainy days during the week." He said, "You had the time between milking off."
Now, I'd like to mention Dad, he enjoyed wool, and he used to do a bit of wool classing for different stations before he bought the Pootree place. And when he got Pootree, after a few years, Williams and Kettle, he was a client of Williams and Kettle's, they had their wool manager, a chap called, I can't think of his first name, but he was Rickard. He was an ex-manager of the Mosgiel Wool Mills in Dunedin.
Mm.
And he came up, and in those times, in the off-season, the local branch would have the wool man stay for a week or two and go around different farms and whatever, meet the clients. And he came to Dad when he came to visit Dad, have lunch or whatever. And they were talking wool, of course. And he said, "You know, this Mr. Rickard said, in this country, with this pumice, you'll never grow quality wool. The pumice will break down, the fibre or whatever." So he said, "If I were you, I'd go for quantity." So Dad did. He went and bought Lincoln rams off Lou Harris and put the Lincoln ram over. And it certainly put the weight into the wool.
That was more like hair, wasn't it?
It was. It was. And then the carpet trade was popular, that coarse wool, and we certainly paid off with the weight of wool. Mm. So he said, "When you go for quantity," he was dead right, we got the quantity all right. And then I always bought, you know, a good coarse wool, open-faced ram, because of the pumice in the country. You see a hot day, a ewe under a pumice bandage, you're frightened that she'd run out and be in a cloud of dust.
That's right.
With the pumice. But no, they certainly putting the Lincoln through, put the weight into the wall. Shearers didn't like it. It was too heavy, but it paid off, definitely.
You'd be machine shearing those days, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes. Well, the first year or two, Dad shore with the blades, with a mate to come and help him. And
just going back into the past, where did your father come from? Was he born in New Zealand, or did he come from...
His father was a school teacher in Fiji, and his father died there. Died in Fiji, and Mum was born in Southland and came up to the North Island, and her parents died, and she was a very good friend, sort of adopted her as a stepmother and father, and she was in hotels. They were in hotels, and they had the Clyde Hotel in Wairoa. Captain Mitchell, he was quite well known in the early days in Wairoa, a bit of a character, and that's where Dad met Mum there.
Sure.
Dad was he was in Gisborne working with Fred Leisner, one of the Leisners anyway, and then he came to Wairoa, bought a farm with his sister, bought a farm at Rukaturi, and that didn't work out too well. So they went off that, and he was in Wairoa doing a little bit of droving and wool classing and whatever until the street replace came. Yeah. That was 1926.
And so you had older brothers and sisters,
I had
didn't
two
you?
Sisters. One died in 2002, and the other one is still. She came and saw me the other day. She's 93. She lives in Beetham Village in Gisborne, and still plays bridge 3 days a week, drives herself everywhere. I don't think she wears glasses only to read. She's still certainly got her full faculties.
And so you carried on working at the farm. Did you play any sports, rugby or anything like that?
No, I played rugby at school, but I wasn't much good at it. I played for the local teams. I played in Wairoa.
You carried on working on the farm, and then at some stage or other you met your wife.
Yeah, well, I worked on the farm. Mum and Dad left in 1950, bought a farm to 25 acres just out of Gisborne, and I stayed on at the farm. Every now and again we'd have a married couple would come, but some of them stayed for a year or so, but some of them were good and some were no good, and I was more or less batching, and always had a single fellow working with us, and then I used to go to Gisborne, of course, to stay with Mum and Dad, and with my sisters. They both were both married and living in Gisborne, and used to go to dances and balls and whatever, and that's at a wedding I met my wife, and we knew one another, and we'd see one another every 6 months. Well, I would contact her about every 6 months, I suppose. I went to Gisborne, and we eventually got married in July 1961, and she came to the farm. They said, how did you propose to your wife? And I just said to her, I said, we were sitting in the car canoodling one night, and I said, I've got a job cooking, would you like it? And she said, do you mean you want to marry me? And I said, well, yeah, I suppose so. And she accepted, and we've been married for 55 years. Three children, two girls and a boy. The girls, one of them's married in Dargaville, and the other one's married in Wairoa, and our son is here in Hastings. Our daughter, eldest one, Tracy, she was very keen on wool, like her grandfather. She did a wool course at Massey College, and then got a job with New Zealand Wool Brokers as their agent in Gisborne, and she and a friend, Philippa White, who was very keen on wool too and doing the same job, she and Tracy, our daughter, made history by judging the wool at the Ruatoria show, the only time girls have ever done it. And in those days, in the 70s, Ruatoria show was quite big. And she also bought the biggest clip of wool in New Zealand, Waipoua Station. She went and bought that.
Where was Waipoua Station?
Wanatutu, in from Te Karaka.
Yep.
Belonged to Clark's. It was Clark and Reynolds. Beautiful property. 38,000 ewes they had. The biggest flock of sheep under the one earmark in New Zealand at that stage.
Just going back to the farm for a moment, Mason, how big was...
Just under 2,000 acres.
And was it all broken in?
Pretty well, yes. Yes, pretty well all broken in. We did a lot of scrub cutting, of course. There was a bit arable. We used to crop a bit, turnips to fatten lambs, swedes for wintering hoggets. And when we sold it, was running over just over 3,000 ewes, just on 300 breeding cows.
So at some stage in the early 50s, you would have started flying super on with aeroplanes, wouldn't you?
Yes, we used to fly off the neighbours at Wairinga Station. The Devon boys used to fly off that, and then we built our own airstrip and made a good job of it, built a lovely big super bin. It was very central, and none of the neighbours used to use that. And it was sited by a very good, well-known top dressing operator, Bill Cookson. He sited it for us, and knew Bill Cookson very well.
Did Jim Frogley ever come up your way top dressing?
I don't think so either.
I think Tutira was as close as he
pretty well
got.
He still does it, doesn't he?
Young Jim does.
Yes.
He's got the old beaver.
That's right, because Ralph Brownlee was here the other day, and he said they had the beaver put our super on. I said, a beaver? And he said, yes. And I said, are they still going?
Yes.
He said, yes, Jim Frogley's got one.
I live in Havelock, about 4 miles from where young Jim lives, and still use the same strip that old Jim used to fly off.
Oh, yeah.
And I hear the beaver taking off in the morning.
Okay.
It's got this big motor that just...
Terrific motors, great planes, weren't they?
Yes. No, young Jim's probably in his 60s now.
No, they're great names, the Frogleys, weren't they?
Yes. And so then you had your children. Your son is in Hastings. What does he do in Hastings?
He's with Fruit Handling Systems. He was head boy at Lindis Farm in the mid-80s, and he met a girl, came out at a Rotary exchange student, and they met and fell in love, and she went back to America, and he went to America in 1986. He worked over there, and then he came back in 1992 or thereabouts, and he was on the farm for a while, and then things changed at Pootree. Pine trees were growing everywhere. It looked as though the school was going to close. Things weren't looking too rosy, so they moved down to Napier, and he working with different firms, and then he got a job with this Fruit Handling Systems, and they sold some of their plants to America, and he went over and installed them.
That was fruit graders, fruit elevator, I know the sorts of things. So at this stage you had a holiday place in Mahia.
Mahia, 1970 we bought that.
And you bought it to go fishing, or...?
Just as a weekend batch, and bought it off a good friend of ours. And we used to go out and stay in the odd weekend and have a bit of fun. And I never had a boat. I didn't need one. I had too many mates with a boat. And I'd give them some petrol or whatever, and
yes,
we'd have a lot of fun. And we always got fish, and it was very good. And then the old shack finally almost came to bits. And in 1977... 78 we built her. Didn't have any money, but I started getting bits and pieces here, there and everywhere, and a few friends, and we built a reasonable house. And then after the accident we moved out there to live. I was getting treatment 3 times a week.
Yes, yes.
And we moved out there, and that's where we stayed until last year.
And you sold the farm?
We sold the farm in 1998.
So did you lease it during that, or did your son run it, or did you run it till...
I ran it until the accident in 1995.
Right.
After the accident, things weren't too good. You know, there was a bit of recession on, so we thought, we'll get out. So we did, in 1998.
Yes. Well, it would have been quite interesting, even looking back at Mahia, how that has grown too, because we started going there. We had a caravan, so we used to camp in... the camping ground, what was the full...
He's here. Mrs. Fulton was here. Les died. He was here too. He died about October last year.
Oh, it's because I met one of the sons runs Kingdom Music in Hastings.
Oh, yeah.
It's a music store. Yeah, so we were going up there in 1970, and it was only just a small village, wasn't
That's right.
it?
A lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you had to make your own fun.
Yeah, you had to make your own fun, exactly. Mm.
So coming back then to the farm... There must have been some funny things happened over the time you were there. There must have been some identities in the valley.
Yeah, well, one of the chaps that worked for us, I was at school with Barry Clayton Green, who was a pretty famous, has become a pretty famous New Zealand dog trialist. Had some great dogs, and who else is there? A lot of...
Was the chap, I've met him a couple of times, John Smith, was he up there?
John Smith.
John Jan Smith?
He managed a place up there,
yes.
John, what was her name?
Jan Smith.
Yes.
Yeah.
He managed a place up there for the one of the Otoy block. Oh no, we used to make our own fun. The school was the hub of the, you know, people used to put us assemble at the school. We'd have I was chairman of the school committee, and we'd have New Year. There was, what have we done for doing for New Year? Nothing. Well, we'd have a do in the school. So we'd have a do in the school.
Yep.
It was very good. And then the land and survey, they bought Otoy Station and were developing it for where Cliff King got his farm. And I was chairman of the school committee, and one school committee, we had the chaps working on these places, the shepherds, the managers, the fencers, or whatever. They had children at school, but they couldn't afford to spend money on where we're getting the school developed, and all wanted bits and pieces. The managers are very good. They'd give us gates and posts and all the sorts of things, but we still wanted money to run the school. So I suggested we go through to the Crown Lands Commissioner in Gisborne and see if we get a bit of land and run it. So we went through and saw the commissioner, asked him, well, I said, what are the chances of getting 80 to 100 acres of land from somewhere, seeing you've got all this land that hadn't been settled, and then we can run it as a little farm? And I don't think we could do that. But he said, we could give you some land and call it a domain or that sort of thing. He said, you can do what you like with it. So they did, and that's how the Otoy domain developed.
How big was the domain?
Oh, it was about 30 acres.
Well, that was a good starting point.
And we used to lease that to the local, and we built one or two of the local farmers later on. One or two of the local settlers that came in were pretty good with their hands, and we bludged some timber and whatever, and we built a nice hall there. I remember they were pulling the hospital down in Wairoa, the old hospital, and I went and I said, I'll go and see this fellow. I didn't know him, but I went, and there was a young chap who'd been in his early 30s. He was in charge of a Palmerston North firm demolishing the hospital. I told him the story. I said, we've got no money, but I said, we want some bits and pieces if you've got any to spare. He said, well, what do you want? I said, well, doors, windows, anything. And I said, how much would it cost? He said, well, you look like a farmer, don't you? And I said, yes, I'm a farmer. He said, you give me a mutton and a dozen of beer. Have you got a truck? I said, yes. He said, bring that in. He said, I'll fill it up for you. So he did. We got doors and windows and sink benches and all sorts of things, which are still there.
And this was the hall?
That was the hall. Now it's called the Putri Domain. And it's very popular with school. People go up there, school camps. It's very popular. It's a nice fishing. It's the Waiau River runs right round it. No, it's very popular. Good fishing. You've got a shower and toilets, tennis court, nice big room. We built another room on for a dance hall, and used to have a lot of good evenings there. Barbecues, they still have them. That's very good.
Yes, of course, once all the shepherds and fencers and cowmen, gardeners and that left those areas, so they just dissipated. The community
died,
didn't it?
Yes, and then we got these new settlers that came in. They were, all good, down-to-earth people.
Mm.
We had a lot of fun. This hall was used a lot.
Yes, I always remember one night I was up at Tarpuni Station staying with Ray Crombie, who was the manager at that stage.
I remember Ray, yes.
And we went down to the little pub on the back road. What's the road called? Tinney Road Pub. And when we were there, they suggested that they were going to have a dance at the Tinney Road Hall. The school were running it, so Ray and I went back to the Tarpuni. It was a fair way up the valley. Anyway, went back and got into some corduroy pants and tartan shirts. It was a Western evening. We went down there and got there, and all the men are at one end of the hall, and all the women are at the other side, and they had the big supper room with the big enamel teapot. And this would have only been about 15 years ago. The band on the stage were nearly all the school teachers.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what a night.
Oh,
it was the most wonderful night. I was a good dancer, and I danced with all these farmers' wives who were, the men were all standing at one end of the room, and we had a wonderful night, and it took me back, and I'd forgotten what country.
That's right, places. I'll bet it would. No, we used to have dudes in our wool shed, and different wool sheds. Great nights.
So, back over the looking at Putri over a period of time, did Putri ever revert at all, or has it always been grazed? None of the countries reverted back to.
No, there's no. No, it was well farmed. Graham Lowe had two properties there, Waiau and Glenlee. No, they were well farmed, and none of it reverted. No, it was. And then the pine tree fella, Roger Dickey, he bought two properties. next door to us, Beverly and Moya.
Was your land efficient at all in any of the trace elements, or was it all right? You remember Taupo, because Taupo had the ash, it was deficient in
cobalt. Yes, well, ours was deficient, but we used to put cobalt ice super on. No, other than that, it was very good. It was very healthy country. Pumice, but the cobalt. We had adventure lambs, of course. It was, you know, the usual.
And, of course, you were in a rainfall area too, weren't
That's
you?
That's right. We had a lot of the tail end westerly showers would come over. So we were in a good rainfall. We had our average rainfall was about 80 inches. So it was very good.
Yeah, I was just looking at some old photos the other day. The Shotters, they used to farm back over the towards Waikaremoana from you.
Waikaremoana, Miramira, yes.
Because did that back onto Putri?
No. That backed onto Waihee and then the.
I've got a letter here. From a chap, his name was Harold Merritt. Cyril Merritt, he wrote this letter. He was working at Crystals. He was a wool classer. And you were talking about, you know, people, he used to go from farm to farm doing wool classing back in the 1920s and scrub cutting. But there was one thing I found quite interesting, and that was they took a mob of cattle from there to Stortford Lodge, drove them down and didn't get a bid for them, and then had to drive them all the way back and let them go in the bush again at Waihua or Mungaharu.
Oh goodness me.
And they said they turned them loose in the bush, and eventually they offered the Maoris a pound a head to pull the cattle out to try and get some money back, but they couldn't find the cattle. It all disappeared.
Yeah. The Mungaharu Range, where is that now?
Well, from Mohaka, you look back this way and you can see it.
That's right, yes.
But anyway, there's probably lots of stories you'll think of when I've gone, but I suppose because you were born in that area, that was what life was about.
Exactly.
The people that you worked with, you had to get on, and the people that didn't get on, they went.
That's right. We didn't go out much. No, we made our own fun, and life was, well, it was good. It was wonderful.
And your wife is in here.
Yes, she's
too.
In the rest area here, yes.
And she suffers some loss of memory?
She's lost some memory, that's right, yes.
Yes.
But other than that, she's, well, we see one another most days. I'll go around there or she'll come around here.
So this picture of you two sitting in the boat, that's you two in the boat, isn't it?
Yes.
You would have only been in your 40s then, 50s, wouldn't you?
Yes, that'd be right.
Who's the chap sitting in the middle?
In the middle, that's me. The one at the tiller, one with the hand on the... is Ian Barber.
Did you know the McGurks?
No, I knew Rod.
I've spent many happy days on the old lake, Waikaremoana. I'm a member of the Wairoa Fishing Club. I have been for a long, long time.
Oh, the Angling Club. Oh, yes. Yes. Well, you'd know the Mokau.
Yeah, only ever stayed in it a couple of times because I had a Toyota Land Cruiser with a cabin built on the back. So I used to sleep in that or sleep on the boat out on the lake.
Yeah, no, I was a member of the... We used to fish the Waiau, and I didn't go to Waikaremoana. We used to go up now and again and get one of the lake house boats like that one there. I was a member of the Friend of the Uruwurrats. I knew a lot of the people, most of those people.
Well, this book of Te Puteri, you know, that's the lake and the schoolhouse?
That's the school there. That's the lake in front of our house.
I'm going to fully copy this book in as part of your history.
That's Cliff's book.
But I'm going to copy it, digitalise it, and that'll be copied in and attached to your history.
I may be able to get you one of those books.
Well, no, I don't need it, because once I can just copy it...
I see.
...and I'll give it back to Cliff, and that's it.
Oh, yeah.
Because you feature in many pages Peter Bedingfield. He was at Napier Boys when I was there.
Oh, yeah, I knew Peter very well. Good fellow, Peter.
Little Jan King, his wife. This will fill in a lot of the gaps, you know, about the school and the things you did within that.
Yeah.
When that's attached to what you've told me...
Yeah.
It makes a very interesting story about yourself and the family.
Yeah, oh, that's good.
Be pleased if he's still alive.
He's a character.
Yeah, tell us about him.
Jack Johnson, he was the manager of Otoi Station, and towards the end of the settlement, there was the four farmers settled in the one day, and Jack asked me if I'd come down and help him sort up all the ewes, draft all the ewes up, and the supervisor was there, a chap called Keith Smith from Gisborne, very nice fella, but he wasn't a terrific farmer, but Jack Johnson had forgotten more than he'd ever learned, and Jack wasn't the man to panic in any way, but Keith was wanting to get things done. Come on, Jack, let's get a move on. And Keith, Jack, who had a cleft palate, or very hard to understand if you didn't know him, don't panic, Keith, don't panic. Shield Me Light. That was the one. When breakfast time came, we went over for breakfast, and Jack's wife, Maudie, had a banquet on for us. Beautiful breakfast, and went back to the yards and drafted more sheep. And there was a lot of sheep to draft. There was about 5,000 or 6,000 ewes that came in. All had to be sorted into ages and whatever, and it started to rain. And Jack said, "Stop, stop." Keith said, "What's wrong now, Jack?" "My hat's leaking." He's a funny man, but a very, very capable man.
He didn't let anything wrong with him.
He knew everything was going on. Very fond of the whiskey.
And did you all have your own shearing sheds there?
Yes, pretty well. Yeah, we all had our own.
Grandchildren?
Grandchildren, yes. The one in Dargaville's got a girl and two boys. The one in Wairoa's got...
What ages are they?
20, 18 and 14. And the one in Wairoa, my daughter's got Angela Mackay got the bookshop in Wairoa. She's got a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old. Right. And Guy's got a 21 or 2 year old son and a 19 or 20 year old daughter.
So you must be ready for some great grandchildren then.
I hope not. No, they're good family.
Okay, well look, that's wonderful. Thank you, Mason. Thank you for sharing your family's life. You, of course, now are in the hospital wing at Gracelands, and your wife is not far away in another room.
She's in the rest area. I'm in the hospital area, and she's in the rest area.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and we'll sign off at that point.
Very good. Thank you.